Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So, Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Not too bad, thanks, mate. A bit slow. It's pretty early, so not really got up to much yet. But I was watching England yesterday, doing the warm-up against New Zealand. It was a pretty good win after a poor performance, let's be honest, against India. It was pretty poor bowling wise. So yeah, I don't know how I'm feeling about the World T20. I'm not necessarily confident England are going to win it, but I certainly think they'll be up there. So yeah, I mean, surely you have to say India are one of the favourites. They just look so good. So yeah, I don't know who's going to be outright winners, but I certainly think England could be up there. So it'll be interesting.
It will indeed, Joe. It's such an open tournament, isn't it? And of course, England, well, as of our recording, 2 days' time, 23rd of October, under the lights at the Ring of Fire, Dubai International Stadium, England versus West Indies, the campaign gets underway. So very much looking forward to that. We will, of course, be covering that here on the podcast with some weekly review shows, charting the three lines and a crown's progress. But that isn't what today's show is about. Instead, we've got a very, very special guest on for a special episode of the County Cricket Podcast. It's our pleasure to introduce him to your listeners. I'm, of course, talking about Lancashire's 2021 Royal London One Day Cup Player of the Season, Danny Lamb. So, Danny, first things first, thank you very much for coming onto the podcast. It's a pleasure to get you on for a chat, mate. How's your day been so far?
My day's been very good, actually. I've been for a run, done a bit of a core workout, and now I've logged on to Zoom to talk to you guys. So, yeah, living the dream.
I was about to say that mornings don't get much better, to be honest. No, I can't say I've been that active this morning. I've been, you know, checking up on the cricket, of course. We've got the T20 World Cup in full flow, been doing some various admin stuff, but no, I can't say I've been on a 5K run or anything like that. Maybe that's why we're not professional cricketers, Joe, and Danny Lamb is. But yeah, maybe that's something we need to learn heading into 2022. But in terms of today's podcast then, folks, basically we're going to be talking to Danny about his earliest cricketing memories. Then we'll be talking about Lancs and, of course, his journey with the Red Rose to date. And then to wrap up today's podcast, we will, of course, be discussing the future and Danny, your aspirations with the club heading into 2022 and beyond. But before we get into all of that good stuff then, Danny, let's go right back to the start, the origin of the Danny Lamb cricketing journey. What were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
So playing would have been, I reckon I'd have been about 4 or 5, and just like having a knock around with my dad up at my local cricket pitch, which would have been Horton. It's a very village cricket club, beautiful cricket club, but yeah, I don't think the standards that high there. But yeah, it was a lovely place. And and yeah, I just remember having like a bit of a knock around with my dad from a watching point of view. I remember going to watch a Roses match, and I must have been 5, 6, something like that. I am pretty sure Stephen Croft was playing.
That's class. That is so good.
I know. I might be slightly out there with my age, but I am 99% sure Stephen Croft was playing, and that's my earliest memory. I can't really remember much before that. So, maybe 5 or 6, maybe my playing, and slightly older going to watch Lancs.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a funny story, isn't it? Stephen Croft, now your teammate at Lancs. It's funny how life works out, isn't it, Danny? Very, very funny indeed. And in those formative years then, I'm guessing very much a family influence. You mentioned your dad and, of course, your sister, who's since gone on to play for the Lancashire Thunder in the women's circuit as well. I just had one question about that, really, because whenever we have, you know, siblings on the podcast, was there much of a sibling rivalry between you two? Or did you kind of, you know, just play the game together, almost, you know, help each other on your respective journeys?
I don't say there's any rivalry there. It was just more of a case of, as you said, playing the game together. And yeah, my dad was quite a big influence on that. From an early age, really, cricket was always my second sport, always. And that was probably true up until maybe the age of 15, 16. I was always a footballer, I was always a goalkeeper. I was signed at Rovers all the way through to Blackburn Rovers, all the way through from under eights to under 16s in the academy. And that was always my dreaming, and cricket was always like the summer part of that. Do you know what I mean? I always used to keep it going, but I was not that, I didn't focus on it as much.
It's a classic case here in England and Wales, isn't it? You have your winter sport, which is football, and the summer sport being cricket, of course. And I do just have a question. It's a little bit off topic, I'm going to be honest, but considering that is Keith Barker's birthday today, he's turned 35, and of course he played professional football, didn't he? Okay, I just had this question, because you said you played football, you're a goalkeeper. Keith Barker apparently has a decent foot on him. If you had to face Keith Barker in a penalty shootout, do you think you'd save his penalty?
Don't know, because I've not kept in ages, but it's a guess, isn't it? It's a lottery. I'll be reading his body language. I'll be trying to work out the angle of his run up, his body position, and I'll probably go long low dive to my left, making sure my right hand's nice and high to palm away anything middle of the goal. I was going to lift your legs up as well to block that one if they get a bit funky to try and smash it down the middle. So yeah,
look, Panenka, then you'd be embarrassed, left embarrassing, left for healing.
Goodness me, it's like having David De Gea on the podcast with that description. To be fair, Danny, I did just want to ask this, really, because you mentioned about goalkeeping. I know a number of goalkeepers. I mean, I was a goalkeeper myself. I haven't become a wicketkeeper, but I know a number of players who goalkeep in football and then they keep wickets in cricket. Was that ever an option for you, or did you never want to go into the world of keeping?
Well, my dad was a keeper. So I'll have tried it, but I just don't think I've enjoyed it. I feel like with bowling, I was always under that impression of bowling and batting. There's only one spot as a keeper, so you're only ever playing for one spot. And it probably stemmed from being when I was a young lad, when there's always that politics at like club cricket, and you might not get a go if you're just a keeper. So maybe that it came from that. And I thought I'd have been all right at it. I mean, I have kept in a Premier League cricket match before, club cricket, for Leyland back in the day. I'd have been six, again, 16, 15, 16. And the pro was bowling and he asked me to stand up to stumps. Honestly, you should have seen it. I caught one. And I don't know even how it landed in my hands with one leg up in the air, trying to like protect myself side on. Honestly, yeah. It was an absolute shambles. I don't think I let many buys through. I just didn't catch many.
Well, as long as you don't let many buys through.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
It's the keeper who's embarrassed by the buys, isn't it? So as long as you don't let many buys through, then that's all that matters.
Yeah.
But let's move on then. Let's talk about maybe something a little bit different. Who would you say your cricketing role models were, maybe growing up and even now, Danny? Is there anyone who really stood out?
So when I was growing up, I was always obsessed. Very ironic, cause it's not really happened, but I was always obsessed with bowling really fast, and it came from my dad that, because he was obsessed with it, even though he was a keeper. So I used to watch obviously Freddie's the obvious one, but then like Brett Lee, Sean Tate, all them lads, Shoaib Akhtar, obviously, and just people who bowl really fast. I was obsessed with it. So yeah, they were probably my role models. I used to try and copy their actions when I was like running up at training and stuff. And yeah, and I just used to try and hurl it down as fast as I could.
I mean, they're proper fast bowlers, aren't they? Like they are like fast bowlers. But speaking of fast bowlers, actually, just maybe a little bit off topic, but have you ever faced Jofra at all?
Never faced Jofra, no. I've talked to Wellesley about this, and because obviously Wellesley knows him pretty well, he's faced him quite a lot. Obviously, he's really fast, but it's not the worst because he's got a nice action. So you see a lot of the ball, and this is going to sound like I'm saying he's not fast because I'm saying he is very fast, obviously. But apparently, it's not the worst because you see it. Do you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. You kind of like know what's coming down to you, almost.
Yeah, because you've got a lovely action. You see the ball the whole way through and it comes out, granted, very fast. But you get a sight of it. The worst ones I found to face are people like Mark Wood.
Mm.
Don't see it.
That would not be fun. That would not be fun.
Who else was horrid?
What's Saqib like as well?
Oh, Saqib's minging.
Is he more like Marwood in that sense that you just...
Saqib's horrendous. Yeah. Yeah. The ball goes behind his body and then all of a sudden it pops out. Indoor nets is...
Oh, on those Old Trafford indoor nets. Oh, that's not very nice.
No, you just feel like you're going to get your arm broken.
I mean, Lancs have some rapid bowlers, obviously. Gleeson as well, and obviously Luke Wood. I mean, Lancs have some seriously quick bowlers. So
Gleeson's got that pace at all. No, yeah, he's another one where you don't get a good sight of it.
I mean, Gleeson's action is so unique. I've never seen anyone with really an action like his anyway.
No.
So, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, he's fast. He bowled at me in training this year before. It was just before the quarter-final at Somerset. But honestly, he was bowling rapid.
Yeah, I bet it is interesting to face him in indoor school.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Gleeson doesn't waste balls in indoor school. But Joss faced a... This was back when Gleeson played for Northants. Joss said to a few of the lads that he's the fastest bowler he's faced.
Flipping out. But that's how you know he's quick. And, I mean, there can't be many people that Joss Butler has not faced in world cricket right now. There can't be. So that's how you know you're quick bowler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is mad.
And I fully, like, I've never faced like the fast Aussies, but sometimes you just know that a cricket ball doesn't travel much faster than that. It can't. So yeah, I fully believe that Gleese on his day is as fast as anyone.
Mm. He's definitely up there, isn't he? He's an absolute rocket. Yeah. And talking of the Aussies, okay, I know it's not the Ashes just yet, but I've got a question for the both of you. Before we move into our conversation about county cricket, it's just inspired me in my head. Right, four Aussie seamers. You've got Sean Tate, Brett Lee, Mitchell Starc, Mitchell Johnson. Who would you least like to face at the Gabba?
See, Brett, for me, although he's probably the most consistently quick, I feel like Brett Lee, again, nice action and sort of knew more where it was going. Right. This sounds horrendous, but where the others weren't as in control.
Yeah,
Like Johnson and Tate, especially.
Stark, you're going to get a broken toe, right? That's I reckon that's true.
But especially Johnson and Tate, you know in the back of your mind, you've got a beamer in them.
Yeah.
So you just can't. I feel like you can't settle with that. They've got like a rogue ball in them that you can't. And because of that, it makes it feel faster.
It's like you don't know when it's coming as well. Like, you know, well, like you say, it could be any ball that you just get beamed.
Or a rapid bounce when he's not meant to.
I think for me, it's got to be Johnson, or I'd at least like to face. Like, I mean, what he did to England in that, what was it, 2012-13 series or whatever.
Yeah.
That was just so scary. Like, one of the hardest challenges for a batsman, like, in Test history, I reckon, to face him across that series. So I think for me, it'd probably be Johnson. But, I mean, like I say, Starc, you're just going to get a broken toe with him, aren't you? He's bowled such a good Yorker. Look at that one he bowled to Stokes. So,
I reckon, for me, it'd be Tate or Johnson. The other two, obviously not ideal, but I'm taking them.
Mm. Yeah, let's be honest. You wouldn't want to face any of them, you know, with a fresh kookaburra ball at the Gabba. You wouldn't want to do that at all. I think for me personally, least like to face would be the wild thing, Sean Tate. He's bowling 160 kilometres an hour. He's got that slingy action. As you said, he has got the unpredictable nature about his bowling. There could be one that just, you know, smashes into your rib cage. But in terms of Mitchell Johnson, I actually wouldn't mind. I'm not going to say I wouldn't mind facing him because he'd absolutely pepper me. But
could arrange that if you wouldn't mind facing him.
Hey, I wouldn't mind a net session with Mitchell Johnson, especially not now because he would have, you know, lost a little bit of pace. But even against prime Mitchell Johnson, because correct. But you can at least try and get your own back for 2013. I suppose that's the only reason why. But to be fair, I say that I'd get absolutely found out within about two balls. So yeah, all obviously theoretical, of course. But yeah, I wouldn't fancy facing any of them, to be honest. All four of them, absolute guns when it comes to fast bowling. And of course, Sean Tate played in county cricket, didn't he, Danny? Played for a couple of seasons. So in terms of, well, I suppose that transitional segment brings us quite nicely on to our conversation about county cricket and Lancs. And I know that my co-host's face will be lighting up with a nice smile now as we get into our nice conversation about Lancashire. So Danny, in terms of the county circuit, what were your first memories of county cricket? What do you remember from maybe watching? You mentioned the Rose game earlier. Was that your first ever memory of county cricket, or was there anything around the same time as well that you kind of draw upon per se?
Yeah, so my first memory was what I was talking about before. It was a Roses match. I was sat, you know, where the Hilton is now.
Yes.
Under there, I was sat under that sort of that area around there.
Right. Yeah.
And it was before, it was when obviously the pitch was the other way. It was a Roses match. I'm pretty sure Crofty played, and I'm 100% sure Michael Vaughan played for Yorkshire. And I was watching Saj Mahmood, and I think it was Kyle Hogg. And yeah, that must have been when Crofty was playing. It must have been. So I reckon it was. I might have been a bit older than six. I might have been about eight or nine. Yeah. So it must have been Crofty's first year. And that was my earliest memory of county cricket.
Fair enough. It's a nice one, isn't it? Joe, your first one wasn't a Roses match, was it? But you started off quite young when it came to Lancs as well.
I think it was a Roses match. I'm was pretty it? Sure. Yeah. I remember going to a game where I'll actually get your opinion on the green kit, Danny. By the way, that we wore in the One Day Cup, because it does link in a little bit to this, because in this particular game that I went to, Lancs wore a green kit for Matt Millen. But yeah, obviously this was the green kit.
Luke Proctor played in that, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. He was bowling, I think, because I watched it on TV. He was bowling like 88 miles an hour. With Gareth Cross stood up to the stumps, and then that was when Crofty took that worldy catch. Yeah, that kit was better than our one day kit.
that one day kit was, obviously it was for sponsorship with AO because they're green, but I don't think Lancs will ever be straying too far away from red or blue again, because
people who might not have seen it, it was that sort of green.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
horrid. I mean, it was sick.
It was not the best shirt. So I think that was my first ever Lancs game, was when we wore the green kit.
Audio. Camera.
Right. Yeah, for those of the audio listeners out there, of course, for the podcast, Danny has just shown us a lime green shirt, okay, yeah. Which is pretty fluorescent, okay, just for the audio listeners out there. Should have made that clear. Brilliant.
Anyway, I mean, that was the first Rosie game. Like you say, I mean, that was a green kit just for one off for Matt Millen. And that was, I'm pretty sure that must have been the first Lancs game I went to. Unless I am forgetting one. But yeah, that's the first time I went to a Lancs game. I don't remember the score, but I just remember that they were playing in a green kit. And like you say, Crofty took that good catch.
Yeah.
Well, good's a bit of an understatement, that insane catch. So actually, while we're on the topic of kits, what is your favourite Lancs kit that you've played in, Danny? While we're on the topic of kits, because personally, I'm I'm the kind of guy who just loves kits. I have a lot of football kits, a lot of football shirts I always wear. So, what's your favourite Lanx kit?
Are we talking 2020? Are we talking Championship or One Dayers? Because I think it's a different answer for each.
Well, you can do both then. I mean, to me, the Championship, I don't really notice much difference. To me, it's just little subtle differences.
Yeah,
but certainly for One Dayers and T20s.
My favourite Championship kit was the one when they were sponsored by Thwaites Wainwrights.
I reckon
that was my favourite.
Just like a classic sponsor in it for Lanxad.
Classic sponsor in it. The material was really good.
Yeah.
They've done that since. From a One Day point of view, probably, was it 2019 when we got through to the semis at Lourdes?
With the white stripe?
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I liked that kit as well. I liked that kit. But one thing I actually remember from that kit is... Zahir Khan, if I remember rightly, didn't actually have a badge on that shirt. I might be wrong in saying that, but I'm pretty sure he never had a badge.
Yeah, Zahir Khan would not have played in that kit because he was the 2020 overseas.
I think we're talking about the T20 shirt. But when we got through to the semis, in 2018, I'm getting mixed up with. Yeah, with the white stripe. Right, okay. Okay. No, I'm following you. That's a nice T20 shirt, though, with the white stripe down that.
Yeah, it was very, it had a bit of PSG about it.
Mm. Yeah. 100%. That was the year the Insane Roses game happened. 14 over a side game. That was the kit, I think. So, yeah. All right. Well, now I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
And
I reckon my favourite T20 kit was probably this year's. The blue and red go well together.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. See what cookery has in store next season, I guess. See what cookery has in store. But let's get back on track then to your career, Danny. And let's talk a little bit about your debut for Lanx. What do you remember from that day?
My debut would have been 2018. It was in the Lime Greens. It was at Trent Bridge. And I just remember Chappie coming up to me in the morning of the match. He says, yeah, you're playing. And I was like, oh, God. probably a different word I use, but... Yeah, I was like, oh, like the panic then sets in. I was in the squad a lot, but I was always like on the edge and just never played and blah blah blah. And then obviously it finally comes and I was in. I was like, I was looking at their squad. They had Jimmy Patterson playing. I was like, I hope I don't bat. So I have to face it.
Another quick Aussie for you.
Mm. Yeah. They had Vessels, Hales, Lum, Mullaney, Fletcher. Can't remember the last couple, but they had a proper team. Anyway, we only got about 250. I think I got like 390. Ball played. So they had a gun, white ball one day squad, like they do now. But I was just looking at these names, thinking, this is proper cricket. Like at the time, because you don't know if you're good enough, do you, until you've played. And at the time, I was just thinking, God, am I good enough for this? Obviously, we batted first, which helped. Watched, I think Alan Livy got a few, but we only managed to scrape to like 250 at Trent Bridge, which, as you know, is probably 200 under par. And from then on, we were right up against it. My first over, I think it went for 10 and had a drop catch, Lum pulled one out. Like slog one out to like deep square leg, dropped for 6. So I was like, oh, here we go. This is gonna be the story of it, story of my day. But I bowled Wessels with slow ball, and then I got Lum out the over after. So it quickly turned in its head, and I ended up pretty decent figures. I think I had better because Jimmy played in that game. I think I had better figures than Jimmy. I was like, yeah, I can do this. I can hold my own here.
Tell you what, that is very, very impressive recall as well, because I did do some, you know, some prior research that they did lose by 7 wickets lengths in that game. But yeah, 2 for 57 from 10 overs with the wickets of Ricky Vessels and Michael Lum. So fair play. Obviously a very memorable day. And how proud of an occasion was that for you personally?
Very, very memorable day. I remember it so well, so vividly, because I couldn't believe how good of a venue that was to play at. And I think they had 10,000 people in. They were doing, I think, £1 tickets for students and stuff like that. It was just full of students. And yeah, it was bouncing for considering it was a 1 day match. And yeah, they trounced us. They proper did us. But yeah, it was very proud. And I was pleased with the way it went. Nothing worse than I've been there. What happened on my championship debut, where I was called in as a concussion replacement, and I think maybe my fourth ball in championship cricket. Worcester were 500 for three. I was called up on day three or day four to come and bowl when they were slogging it, and Ross Whiteley hit like one of my first few balls in championship cricket over the tree at Worcester for six. So yeah, like that was like the two ends of the spectrum. Like you're always clawing it back from there.
That is very, very true. And to be fair, just in terms of that championship debut, that is quite historic in terms of county cricket, because you were the first ever concussion replacement in England and Wales. It was for Joe Menny, wasn't it, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, it was for Germany. I think he got one hit. I think Guptill hit one back at him. Not on the full. He hit into the floor. And I think it just skidded a bit more than he thought. Like, you know, when it sits in the pitch and you catch it, I think it just came at him a bit quicker than he thought. And yeah, it got him on the head. I think he was all right. Yeah, but he was all right. So, but I think it's just a precaution thing nowadays, isn't it? And rightly so. It's quite a serious issue, as you've seen with Harvey Hussain.
Well, Pukowski's—he had another concussion, didn't he, the other day? Well, Pukowski, isn't he on like 10 already? Now he's in like 24. So yeah, as you say, it's quite a scary thing, really. I guess that can happen.
Yeah, it is. I don't really know the science behind it, but is it a case of once it happens once, it's more likely to happen again?
Yeah, basically, it's the same thing in boxing. Basically, because it's your body's natural reaction to it from then. And that is the problem. It's something which, to be honest, we don't know the full scale of either. That's the other problem. You can develop CTE later on in life, which is problematic. Well, it's potentially life shortening as well. And I'm glad, to be honest, when it comes to cricket, we are taking concussion more seriously, because as we know, it can shorten your lifespan and it can produce a lot of issues later on in life. And as you mentioned, Danny, it was gutting, wasn't it, to see Harvey leave county cricket at the age of 25. I mean, he's just had the season of his life as well, but you have to remember health is wealth, and it's the number one. It takes precedent over sport.
Just show you, I don't actually know what happened to Harvey, how he got his concussion, and I assume it'd be batting. But like, helmets are fantastic, but for those listening who maybe don't understand, when you get hit hard by someone bowling fast in the helmet, in the right on the button, it feels like you've been hit around the head with a baseball bat.
Yeah, it does.
Like, no matter how good you think your helmet is, it still doesn't stop your brain from rattling around inside your skull.
Well, that is spot on. And in fact, there is a video for anyone interested in, you know, understanding the effects of concussion and, of course, the evolution of cricket helmets. I think this actually was from the ECB, if I'm not mistaken. It's on their YouTube channel. They did some experiments at Loughborough Uni, of course, which is world renowned in terms of not just cricket science, but sports science in general. I mean, they actually show you, and as you said, Danny, your entire head shakes about in this thing when you get hit around, I think it was only about 87 miles an hour as well, say only. That is incredibly fast. But to be honest, when you think there's guys out there producing 93, 94 mile an hour thunderbolts, it is a little bit of a wake-up call. And as we keep on mentioning, it is a very, very good decision, I think, from cricket boards to take concussion seriously until we understand the full extent of what damage they can cause.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Danny, from that very, very unique circumstance, I suppose, in terms of your championship debut, I said the first ever one, it's a bit like Marnus in the Ashes. He was the first ever Ashes substitute, wasn't he, for Steve Smith at Lords. You have, of course, gone on to, well, let's face it, achieve some excellent things in a Lancashire, 2019, for example, winning Division 2, getting promoted. And, of course, yet we have gone back to two divisions now, heading into 2022. In retrospect, and I imagine Joe will have some things to say about these memorable moments, but what do you say has been your highlight from your time with the Red Rose?
Probably this year. Finishing second. Honestly, I've had sleepless nights over that. We thought they had to be able to hang on.
I thought it looked so flat,
and then because we finished really early, we were already celebrating, and we were just watching these wickets fall on our phones, and there was just silence in the middle of this bar in Manchester. Yeah, it was just silence.
It was a tough pill to swallow as a fan. So, you know, just to think what it was like for you guys as players, but.
I think there's something about a championship where obviously I've not really been to finals day with 2020, played 2020 at finals day, but I feel something different with a championship where, because it's over such a long period and the games are over such a long period, it takes such a team effort to get yourself in that position. I think the it's a different sort of elation.
Yeah,
where 2020 is like slap bang wallet, and there's an element of luck to it. It's a lottery really. So yeah, I'd say the best moment has been this year at Liverpool when we won that match and we thought we won the championship.
Yeah, I mean, what was it like actually watching Parky face? What was it? Two balls that he faced against Mason Crane, because. I mean, as I say, watching it at home, it was very nervy.
Yeah, honestly.
You know Parky way better than probably a lot of people. So, like, what was it like, yeah, watching those two balls?
I wasn't, honestly, like, you know when you get that nervous feeling of you're almost going to be sick?
Yeah.
It was like that. Yeah, it was like that. I remember him walking out. I said walking, waddling out. I was just like, please, please do not do anything stupid. And to be fair,
you think he was going to try and go for the glory? Because what was it like? Was it two or three to win?
Parky lines up well. Although he's a number 11, he's not, there's way worse.
He scored runs for England this year. So against like Shaheen Afridi, he scored some runs against top bowlers. So
technique's good.
Yeah,
his technique's good. It's a bit different though, doing it against a white ball.
Oh yeah, of course. But even so, he's still got the basics. As you said, he's still got a good technique.
Yeah. I was quietly confident. Is probably not the word, but I backed him. Yeah. But I'm still very nervous.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. And obviously, Dane hit the. It was a great shot as well to win it, by the way. And then, yeah, it was probably a whirlwind 24 hours, well, less than that, maybe 18 hours for you. So, yeah. And did you see the video? I saw it on Lanx's Twitter, actually, of Livy reacting to the game at Nets at the IPL. I thought that was a great video as well.
Yeah.
And he was just like, get on with it. Because it did take a long time. And it's one of them where, you know, time seems to go slow, extra slow in situations like that.
Well, Vince was, you see, he's such a good master technician
of
stuff like that. Like he captained them so well. Everything was thought through, and he doesn't look like he panics. Yeah. Like he looks like cool as a cucumber. And obviously they lost, but from the position they were in, is like thinking and his tactics, and obviously the spinner did it for them to get him in that position, but he knew when to slow the game down, and by obviously taking that bit more time, obviously it puts a bit of people start to think about what they're doing. So if Parky's out there, he's actually thinking, instead of it being like a bang bang bang, oh it's done, it's a I'm having to wait here and I'm thinking about what could happen and what might not
the
happen.
Worst or the best, even, I don't know.
Maybe
he was thinking about the best. But
so yeah, it was clever from Vince to do that.
I mean, it clearly worked, because I was say, look at Livy's reaction watching it from the UAE, it really was a whirlwind. And And obviously, I mean, for me, this was a great season for Lancs. I really do think it was. And in the T20 as well, you know, obviously that the quarterfinal wasn't to be, but I think in the T20, like the whole, as a collective, pulled it back really, really well. Because at one point, it didn't honestly look like we were going to get through. We were sixth or seventh, and then did really well to get through.
I think so. I think it's been a good season.
100%.
It's like, again, as I said, 2020 is a bit of a lottery. One innings or one bad over or a couple of bad balls or a couple of good balls away from winning the game at any time. So it doesn't necessarily, like, we always go back to our stats. We've got highest win rate in T20, highest win percentage in T20 in the world. And we only win 53 or 54% of matches. Yeah. That's the highest in the world.
Which is crazy. I mean, that's why I wish they kind of stood at a T20 Champions League as well. I think that'd be great to see. Just to, you know, to play against the IPL teams and against the big bash, especially the big bash teams, where there's similar amount of money, I'd imagine, to T20 Blast. I mean, the IPL is so much money, and you can buy pretty much whoever. But, you know, especially against the big bash teams, it'd be fascinating to see, actually, you know, your Lancs, your Notts, and Kent's, those kind of teams come Orishes. Up against, maybe not Orishes, but you know, those kind of teams.
We reach the quarters as well, but carry on.
Come up against, you know, the likes of, you know, the Melbourne Stars and all these different teams. So I think that'd be a fascinating thing to happen one day. I don't know if it ever will, but
I'd be up for that.
In fact, Danny, if Lancs did qualify for the Champions League, right, if there was one, of course, who would be your ideal opponent? Which of the global, you know, mega franchises would you want to take on?
What, if there was no prize money? And well, all right, if there's prize money, the worst. Three of the worst teams.
Right, let's say, not for money, let's say it's literally an exhibition match, right? Let's say it's, you're both already through, okay, in the group stage, you're going through to the playoffs. Who do you want to play? Yeah. Because for me personally, I think most people would probably say the Mumbai Indians, because they have been a real...
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same thing. Mumbai Indians.
Yeah.
At their place. Is it the Wankhede?
In Mumbai.
Yeah. I love Mumbai, because we've been a few times on pre-season tour there. And for me, it's such a special place. A lot of people don't like it because it's very, very busy and it's just different. I love it. I love everything about it. It's such a good experience.
Can I just ask one question about that? Because I've seen, you know, NASA's documentary. Again, that's on the Sky Sports YouTube channel. Did you ever get to experience the Maidans? For those who don't know what the Maidans are, they're basically these massive open spaces and you have like 6, 8, possibly even 10 games going on at the same time. Did you ever get to experience those or see them in Mumbai?
We never saw the Maidans, but he's not lying when he says, like, people just play cricket all the time, any place they can. So you're I can't it might be called Marina Drive I think the road, yeah, Marina Drive, where it runs along the coast, and then the Wankhede is on the right, on the right hand side, like inland. You go past it, and then basically following that, there's like building, tiniest like little field to playing cricket on it, like a proper game of cricket. Building, game of cricket, building, cricket. It's madness. That's all they do all the time. They're playing on the streets, playing in the car park, playing anywhere they can. It's a different world. Different world. It's quite a humbling place, obviously, because you've got that there's a big divide between the poor and the rich, and you see a lot of sites that you just think, wow, like that's like it makes you feel lucky. But for me, India, that place, that experience was fantastic. And also it made me such a better player. I'd definitely say play Mumbai Indian at the Wankhede.
Yeah. To be honest,
that'd
Danny.
That'd be a very cool experience.
It would. Yeah. Joe, I know you'd make the journey as well, wouldn't you? Supporting the Lancs boys.
Yeah, that'd be very good. I'd love to go to India one day. It'd be insane, like you say, Danny. So yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean that would be a really good match.
It's just the culture, isn't it? Because as you rightfully said, Danny, cricket is basically life. There is that entirely different culture of cricket. It's one that I've always wanted to experience. In particular for me, Bengaluru, which is in South India, because I'm an RCB fan when it comes to the IPL. But it's just I'd say it's an intoxicating cricket culture. I'd always love to experience that. And as you said, it made you a better cricketer. Now, that is a fantastic thing to hear as well from a Lancashire perspective. Of course, I know, Joe, you'll be happy with that. And in 2021, I must admit, you've had an absolutely fantastic season for the Red Rose, in particular in the Royal London One Day Cup. And if we could just get some thoughts, to be honest, Danny, how would you describe your performances in 2021 in a Lancashire? How would you go about putting that into words, per se?
Well, I've been very happy with the way I performed. And I think not just my like performances, so like from a stats point of view, not from that, more from affecting the outcome of games more. So I feel like I've got better at reading game situations, perhaps than what I used to, and obviously that comes with a bit more experience. Like I've played a decent amount of cricket across all forms now at first team level, so I've got a bit of experience to draw on when it comes to them sorts of games where it gets a bit nip and tuck, and yeah, that's the most pleasing thing for me.
Yeah, I mean, 100%, Danny. I've definitely noticed that from like a fan's point of view. You know, like how you say you're affecting games more. I mean, the knock against Yorkshire in the T20 at Old Trafford was one of the best T20 knocks I've seen for a long, long time. And I mean, obviously, it got us over the line, and that was a crazy game, by the way. The whole game was crazy. I mean, Woody bowled phenomenally in that game, and then obviously yourself, you know, scoring those runs at the end. So that was a brilliant game. So yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely think you know, overall as a overall season, I mean, for me, you alongside, you know, two or three others have been certainly for me player of the season for Lancs, 100%, 100% without a doubt. So yeah, I mean, it's been great to watch. It really has.
Thank you.
And I guess like looking forward then into the future, what do you want to achieve with Lancs? Because you know, there's so many different things to kind of tick off on a personal and as a team, you know, on your bucket list almost. So what kind of things are you looking to achieve in the coming years with Lancs?
I want to win trophies. And then that taste of it nearly happening this year. We had a team chat after like coming second, and I can tell you, all the lads are more than keen to make sure that never happens again, coming second, because that was horrendous, and
especially in the way it happened as well.
Exactly. So I feel like we've got a taste for it now. I'm hoping this. I hope we've got a taste for it. And I can't see us. We've got such a strong squad that we shouldn't be not challenging. Obviously, there's very good teams out there, and all you can do is give yourself the best chance being up there as long as possible until the end. But I can't. We should be challenging all the time across all formats. I personally think.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, like I say, the squad is so strong. And obviously, Alex Davis has now left, obviously, against Warwickshire, but we're replacing him with Phil Salt, effectively. So, I mean, what a player Phil Salt is, by the way. He's absolutely incredible. At least you won't have to bowl to him for Sussex anymore. So, that's a bonus. And,
yeah,
I mean, overseas recruitment is still to come as well. And who knows, maybe we'll see the return of Finn Allen or Glenn Maxwell. I mean, I'd love to see both of them return. Who knows? But yeah, as you say, it's an incredibly strong squad that Lancs have. It really is. So, I mean, Aaron, what do you think about Lancs' squad? You must be pretty scared, no? As a Warwickshire fan?
I don't think scared's the right words I'd use, to be honest, Joe, because at the end of the day, it's cricket, right? Anything can happen in the game of cricket.
100%, 100%.
So I wouldn't say I'm scared by any squad. I wouldn't even say that the Warwickshire squad's scary because anyone can win on their day. But in terms of Lancs as a team, just to echo, Danny, your words from earlier, I do think it was a very, very impressive season from the Red Rose across all three formats. In particular, the Royal London One Day Cup, just one game from that. The game up at Sedbergh was absolutely outstanding. That was brilliant to watch. It shows the real character, 100%. Grit, 100%. Resilience and fortitude of this unit. And then in the Championship, again, yes, my county did emerge victorious in the end, but what a title race. And I know it's very cliche, but it does take two to tango. Or in this case, four, because we had the likes of Notts and Hampshire in it as well. And the fact is, in 2021, Lancs, and of course those other three teams, can take a lot of positives from that. And if you look at this Lancashire unit heading into 2022, with, as you said, Joe, Phil Salt, what an incredible piece of business that was from the Red Rose. If you can get the overseas recruitment correct, you've got a strong domestic core with the likes of yourself, Danny, with the likes of Keaton Jennings, Liam Livingston, with the likes of Sakiba Moo, Tom Bailey, Luke Wood, on paper, and Matt Parkinson and Tom Hartley as well in the spin department. On paper, at least, and yes, the game isn't played on paper, as we all know, but Lancs always do seem to have very strong squads. But in 2022 in particular, if this can be used as a springboard in 2021, you've got to think silverware is definitely on the cards. It has to be. With the strength of that team, it has to be at least on the radar. And to be honest, I'll be very, very surprised if Lancs don't get a trophy next season.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, it's not as simple. It's not as simple as
correct.
That.
Yeah, of course.
It's nice as it was.
Yeah, it was.
There's a lot of things that affect it. Obviously, injuries are key. That scuppered us a bit in the T20 this year. I think all of a sudden coming back from the 100. I think we had two lads. Yeah, we did. We had two lads gone. And then that puts you then on the back foot. Obviously, the lads coming in more than back them. But it puts you on the back foot because the lads who've played have that experience of playing in this year's, like, in that competition. And there's just something about having your frontline players fit and ready for them big games. And that's the important thing, keeping as many lads fit as possible, especially in your seam department.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I mean, that's something which Warwickshire learnt firsthand in 2019. We lost seven seam bowlers, which was absolutely crazy due to injury. And that has just reminded me as well, of course, we mentioned there about the experienced players and a potential overseas contingent, but some of the young lads at Lancashire as well. The likes of, I mean, Tom Hartley's not exactly, you know, he's not exactly an experienced veteran. He's coming up through the ranks. Got the likes of George Burrows, George Balderson, Joe, your mate, Jack Morley as well. George Bell's another one on the radar. George Lavelle. A lot of Georges at Lancashire, actually, come to think of it, when you put it like that. But there is a lot of good young talent at Lancs. And again, with experience, with these major match days, with these big occasions, under the lights, on the Sky Sports cameras, I must admit, the future does look bright for the Red Rose. We'll have to wait and see how you do perform in 2022. But Danny, I think it goes without saying that myself and, of course, Joe, as our resident Lancashire fan, are wishing both yourself and the county nothing but the very best of luck heading 100%. Into 2022.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure, Danny. And to be honest, it's been an absolute delight having you on the podcast today. I know, again, it goes without saying, but we've both thoroughly enjoyed it. I know, Joe, you've enjoyed it as well, talking all things Lancs for once. I haven't had to display my Warwickshire bias too much in today's podcast, but before we do end and say our goodbyes, Danny, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels or websites, for example?
No, I don't, actually. You caught me off guard there. yeah. Check me out on Twitter and Instagram. I don't even know what my Twitter handle is. I've not been on it in ages. Instagram at DannyLamb190. It's a great follow.
Yeah, exactly. To be fair, Danny, we'll leave those in the podcast description anyway. So if you want to go and follow Danny on Instagram and, of course, on Twitter as well, some good content on there, as Danny has just said, do go ahead and do that. And, of course, if you're a Lancashire fan, continue to support the team, follow the boys on social media, and, of course, next year, go to games. Well, hopefully for the T20s in particular, we will be back to full attendance for all of the games, fingers crossed. But, yeah, if you're a Lancashire fan, keep on supporting the boys heading into 2022. And of course, beyond. But that is pretty much it from us three here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.